welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
My name is Ashley Cutnow, and I am a shareholder with Ogletree Deacons. And this is the third in a series of podcasts related to unemployment and the COVID-19 crisis. Today, we're going to focus on issues related to the reopening of the country and the return to work of employees who have been on a layoff or a furlough. We're going to try to focus on questions related to how to bring employees back and some of the challenges that employers are facing in this podcast. All of these questions are going to be related to unemployment and do not cover the full gamut of return to work issues, but we hope that this will help you at least begin to think about some of the issues you may face as you bring employees back onto your roles for coming back to work. So the first thing you need to do when you consider bringing employees back as you reopen is think about the process that you took when you actually laid off or furloughed your employee. Technically, the word furlough is a loose term that many people have been using during the COVID-19 crisis. For purposes of this discussion, this is how I'm going to define the words. A furlough is when you had someone who was essentially on an unpaid leave of absence. You did not terminate the employment relationship with them, but they were eligible for unemployment because you had them on a long-term unpaid leave. A layoff, however, was a full termination of the employment relationship. There was no guarantee or intent that you would bring them back. You hoped you would, but you were unsure if you were able to do so. As we talk about these things, I want you to keep in mind what type of employment situation you are in. Did you have a layoff or did you have a furlough? And I'd like you to consider the practical realities of that before you think about what you called it. There may be some things that you need to do as far as a background check or filling out a new I-9 or things you generally do in regards to hiring if you had a layoff. If you had a furlough, on the other hand, where the person was really just on an unpaid leave, that employment relation did not end. So those hiring things may not need to be redone depending on how long the person was on a furlough. So one thing I like to encourage folks to do when they're bringing people back to work is consider what happened to the health insurance for the impacted individual. Depending on your plan and whether it was a layoff or a furlough, you may have given COBRA notice to the employee, or you may have been able to continue their health insurance. Different insurance companies had some grace periods that were changed due to COVID-19. So make sure you understand what kind of health insurance your employees are currently on. So when you bring them back, you provide the insurance company and the employees notice as to what situation they're in. For example, do they need to re-enroll or are they still being covered in the same way they were before? This is probably going to require you to talk to your health insurance company and to your plan to make sure you understand what is happening with the employees. Also, when you bring employees back, it is very important that you provide notice to them in writing. This is important for a couple of reasons. First, if you're an employer with under 500 employees and you did get a PPP loan from the government, if an employee refuses to come back, the Treasury has put out interim regulations that say the failure of that employee to return to work will not impact your forgiveness. However, you're going to need to be able to prove that the employee did not come back and that they were offered a job back. A written notice will help you do that. A written notice will also help you if the employee refuses to come back to work and you need to report that to your state unemployment agency. So it's important to bring people back through a written notice. It's also a good time in that written notice to begin to talk to your employees about what you're doing to make sure they're going to be safe when they come back, what changes you've made to the working environment, and what your plan is going to be as far as following CDC and other OSHA-related guidelines related to safety as you return to work. It's also important that you provide employees training on what their part is going to be in keeping your workplace safe as you come back. For example, are you going to require things like temperature checks or a safety protocol or questionnaire to be followed? All of these details about safety in the workplace have been covered on other podcasts and on webinars and in blog posts that are available on the Ogletree Deacons coronavirus page if you're interested. We also have a fantastic return to work guide that goes into many of these safety questions as far as developing a plan for coming back to work. If you're interested in any of that, please review the coronavirus resource page that Ogletree Deacons has online, as we're not going to go into the details of that on this podcast today because it doesn't directly impact unemployment. So I think the number one question related to unemployment is, what do you do if an employee refuses to come back to work once you ask them to come back? So the answer to that is multifaceted. So first, it's important to understand the rules in the state in which you're operating and in which that employee works. Generally, the answer is, if an employee refuses to come back to work when a job is available, they are no longer going to be eligible for unemployment. Now, there are a couple of exceptions to that. Mainly, they're twofold. The first is, why is the employee refusing to come back to work? If they have a generalized fear of COVID-19 without any specifics, then they are probably going to be excluded from receiving unemployment or any kind of pandemic unemployment assistance. However, if the person has an underlying condition as defined by the CDC, or if they're over the age of 65, so they are in the CDC high-risk category, the individual may still be able to receive unemployment. The question becomes, are they able to receive unemployment through the state system, or may they be qualified under the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, which again is a new program provided for by the CARES Act that is not paid for by employers and is not connected to an employer's account. It is instead a federally funded unemployment assistance program for individuals who do not qualify for state unemployment. For high-risk individuals, some states have modified their qualification criteria such that that person would be qualified under a state system. Other states have chosen not to do so. So for that person to be covered, they must apply for pandemic unemployment assistance. The same is true for someone who cannot return to work because of childcare issues. Some states have changed their qualifying criteria such that that will be covered by state unemployment, but others have not. Pandemic unemployment assistance, however, will cover someone who cannot return to work as a result of childcare issues, assuming that person cannot work from home. Now, if you're an employer with less than 500 employees, please do not forget to look at and consider your obligations under the Family First Coronavirus Act. There are now emergency paid sick leave rules under the FFCRA for someone who has COVID-19 or is caring for COVID-19. Also, other states have provided for paid sick leave related to COVID-19. Now, from an unemployment perspective, if you have someone who is subject to a paid sick leave requirement under the FFCRA or under a state unemployment law, they will not also be eligible for unemployment benefits. They're not unemployed. They're on a paid sick leave. The same is true if you have an employee who's subject to emergency FMLA under the FFCRA. Again, that is only available for individuals who may not return to work because they have childcare issues as a result of schools and daycares closing. It is only available to employers with under 500 employees, and there are some certain exceptions for under 50 employees. Again, if you have someone who's on an emergency FMLA paid leave, they will not be eligible for unemployment because they're on a paid leave. However, if the job is eliminated, that person will be able to get unemployment either through the state system or through the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. You do need to consider all of these ramifications. And again, if you're not familiar with the FFCRA, I would encourage you to look at the podcast that Ogletree has or the information that's available on the coronavirus resource page. So if you have an employee that does not have an underlying condition, they're not high risk, They don't have childcare issues. They just are refusing to come back to work. What should you do? In most states, there is a process for you to report the failure to return to work. Many of your unemployment agencies are actually updating this information in real time if they didn't previously have a process for this. In some states, the way that reporting occurs is that you will actually fill out a certain form and mail or email it back into the agency. In other states, this is done through a fraud hotline or through the fraud process. That is how the unemployment agency is directing you to report individuals who have been offered a job and have refused to come back to that job. The unemployment agencies are encouraged and have incentive to get people back to work. So they want to know if an individual is refusing to come back to work. We are primarily seeing this occur on two occasions. One, when we do have this general fear of COVID-19. What you should do in that situation is really sit down with that individual and tell them what you're going to do to make the workplace safe. What changes have you made, again, with the CDC and the OSHA guidelines or your state guidelines that have been put out? Some states are even asking you to have a plan in place, a written plan, as employees come back. Talk to the employee to see if you can ease their discomfort to try and get them back into the workplace. Second is the group of employees who, as a result of the additional $600, are actually bringing home more money as a result of unemployment than they were through the wage that they were earning at work. This is a real problem for the restaurant industry, for some of our hospitality industries, and for some other employers who are on the lower level of the wage scale. Again, this is to some extent a short-term problem, assuming Congress does not extend the $600 benefit. But again, there's a way to report that to encourage employees who have been impacted to come back to work or their unemployment benefits, including the additional $600, may be cut off by the unemployment agencies. But the only way the unemployment agencies are going to know that that has occurred is if employers step up to the plate and report that it has happened. The other big issue that we're seeing as companies reopen and return people to work is the unfortunate scenario where employees were on a furlough, but now a realization has occurred that they're not going to be able to bring all of their employees back. So that furlough is essentially converting to a layoff. If this is occurring, you need to consider whether or not you were filing on behalf of your employee for unemployment. In some states, an employer is only able to do that if the employee is on a partial unemployment and or in a furlough scenario. If you transition out of that status into a full layoff, you may need to transition so that the impacted individual is filing the unemployment on their own, and you certainly would need to notify the individual of that day. You also need to be aware that if you're in a situation where you are converting from a furlough to a layoff, you are now terminating the employment relationship. So to the extent you have any termination requirements, you need to make sure you are continuing with those obligations. So for example, if you have an obligation to pay out sick leave or PTO or vacation time at the end of employment, either based on your state law or based on your handbook or your agreements with the employees, you must do that when you convert the employee to a layoff. That is their termination. The same thing is true for any kind of COBRA notice that you may need to give. If you did not have to give COBRA notice before because your furloughed employees were able to stay on your healthcare plan, you will need to give your COBRA notice at this point in time. The same thing is true for any of your WARN requirements or your mini WARN requirements. And you'll need to make sure you do a look back, because remember, WARN actually looks back to the date that the impact happened, which may be the furlough date, not the layoff date. So make sure you're considering your WARN and your mini WARN obligations. Finally, one of the last things that we see is employees asking questions about reopening, but not being able to fully reopen. So what they are talking about is bringing people back to work part-time, essentially. So if you're going to do that, it's important for you to understand your part-time and partial unemployment offset roles in the state in which the employee works. As we discussed in series 2 of the podcast, but I'll repeat here in case you didn't hear it, Every state has a different way in which they calculate partial unemployment. What that means is that there is a calculation for how much money an employee can bring in on a weekly basis and still receive unemployment. In every state, there is a maximum amount where if the impacted individual is earning more than that dollar amount, they will no longer be eligible for unemployment in that week. As long as the $600 benefit is still in play as a result of the CARES Act, the impacted individual will not receive the additional $600 in a week if they do not receive the underlying state unemployment benefit. So if the employee comes back part-time, but they earn too much money to qualify for state unemployment, they will also not receive that additional $600 benefit, which could be impactful as far as your scheduling or how many people you bring back or how you think about your return to work guidelines. Hopefully this session has been interesting to you and has been helpful in assisting you with thinking through some of the return to work issues that we're seeing with employees as far as unemployment is concerned. In our fourth series on unemployment, we're going to go through a couple of our most commonly asked questions, and we hope that you will join us. Again, Ogletree Deacons has a coronavirus resource page on our website with answers to many of your commonly asked questions related to employment and the coronavirus pandemic. We have an unemployment team that was developed specifically to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. You can get additional information on unemployment on the coronavirus resource page, or you may contact me directly. I hope you'll join us for series number four as we answer some of our most frequently asked questions related to unemployment. Talk to you next time.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.